You know a bridge that you want fixed, but how do you prioritize a whole country? I'm David Brancaccio. Let's update the closely watched vote for or against a union at an Amazon warehouse in Alabama. The news agency Reuters is reporting that roughly 500 ballots submitted have been challenged. Marketplace's Erica Barris is monitoring this.
When it comes to organized labor, this is a really important election. Amazon is one of the biggest companies in the country, and this Alabama facility could become the online retailer's first organized workplace in the United States. The National Labor Relations Board, NLRB, has more than 1,000 ballots left to count, and the Retail, Wholesale, and Department Store Union is asking the NLRB to look at Amazon's conduct during the election.
Conduct in what way?
Well, there are claims that Amazon held mandatory meetings to discourage workers from voting for unionization, and that it improperly pushed the U.S. Postal Service to install a mailbox at the facility. Amazon has said the mailbox was installed to make voting easy. The challenge ballots are being examined for tampering, eligibility, and other issues.
The vote counting is set to resume today. Any idea where things stand?
With only about half the votes counted, it's still too early to determine what may happen. It's the same as watching any other election results come in. You can talk all about what the early returns mean, but it isn't over until every vote is counted.
Erica, thank you. As we reflect over the last week, let's rest on a call, let's call it a disconnect or a paradox, the surprisingly strong hiring report from 1 week ago covering March versus this week's numbers on people drawing unemployment. When you factor in the expanded pool of people eligible for unemployment benefits during pandemic, this includes part-timers, self-employed people, and gig economy workers, the number is stubbornly high. On Fridays, we check in with Christopher Lowe, the chief economist at FHN Financial in New York.
When you add all the numbers up, there are still 17.5 million people receiving unemployment benefits. And just to put that into perspective, at the peak of the Great Recession back in 2009, the top number receiving benefits was 7 million. So more than twice that still collecting unemployment.
So last Friday's strong seeming employment report, we shouldn't get too carried away?
Well, that's right. And it's really important to understand the employment report doesn't capture everybody. It misses particularly people who were working in the lowest paid industries, because many of those are in fact falling under the self-employment or part-time categories. And it's clear there are millions and millions of people still out of work. Until we can fully reopen the economy, we need to worry about that. They need to be taken care of.
Chris Lowe, Chief Economist, FHN Financial, thank you so much.
Thank you, David.
The New York-London air route is one of the busiest in the world, and with vaccinations well underway, many Americans might be thinking about vacations over there, but the British government today said not so fast. My Marketplace colleague, the BBC's Victoria Craig, has more from London.
May 17th is the earliest possible date international travel will resume here in Britain. But even if travelers are allowed in and out, a number of restrictions will still remain in place. First, a traffic light system will categorize countries based on risk, but an official list hasn't yet been released. Second, all passengers, even in green-listed nations, will be required to take a PCR coronavirus test before they travel and once they arrive. Those cost as much as $160 each, and it's a price tag the travel industry says is too high. Here's Johan Lundgren, the boss of British discount carrier EasyJet.
The consequence is, of course, that this adds cost, and it risks reversing the clock where flying has been for, you know, wealthy people who just can afford to pay this.
To that, UK Transport Secretary Grant Shapps says he wants to lower the cost and has vowed to work with private companies who make the tests to make them more affordable. If they don't, he's threatened to drop them from Britain's recommended supplier list. In London, I'm the BBC's Victoria Craig for Marketplace.
We have seen the Biden administration's infrastructure plan, and the sales campaign has begun. There's so much there, including hardening and greening the energy grid. And the plan calls for fixing 20,000 miles of roads and 10,000 bridges. President Biden said last week the list will include the 10 most economically significant bridges in the country in need of reconstruction. Now, you may have some guesses on this, but so far the crucial bridges have not been named. Marketplace's Matt Levin has been poking around.
When President Biden made his big speech last week in Pittsburgh, he made this top 10 list sound pretty urgent.
We got 10 most economically significant bridges with more commerce going across it that need to be replaced.
So which are the 10 bridges I should avoid?
I would be hard-pressed to find 10 bridges. I mean, I would have probably 50 or 100 finalists, right?
Oh, perfect. Maria Lehman is with the American Society of Civil Engineers. According to their infrastructure report card, about 46,000 bridges across the country are in bad shape. They're part of a national traffic jam that costs the U.S. tens of billions in lost productivity each year. But the bridges most likely to make the list?
The most poor condition, the most amount of traffic, the heaviest truck volumes on it, and then it's critical for interstate traffic.
If you're listening in Southwest Ohio or Northern Kentucky and you've tuned into the local news lately, you're probably nodding your head eagerly right now.
You normally take the Brent Spence Bridge to get to work. You may have to find an alternate route. Starting tonight, half of the lanes will be closed, both top and bottom. Good times.
The Brent Spence Bridge spans the Ohio River, connecting Kentucky and Cincinnati. It was declared functionally obsolete in the 1990s. Paul Lewis is with the Eno Center for Transportation, a Washington, D.C. think tank. He says the Brent Spence occupies a special place among the constituents of Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell. Just like the bad bridges on I-95 in Pennsylvania matter a lot to Democratic Senator Bob Casey's voters.
Perhaps that's why they didn't name which of the 10 bridges are actually going in there, because it's not just a decision-making process from a need standpoint, but there's also a political component, too.
That includes environmental politics. The president also wants to go big on electric vehicles. Again, Marie Lehman with the American Society of Civil Engineers.
The more we get into electric vehicles and storage, they're heavier. If you do that on a truck, it's a lot heavier. So you got to think about all those things as you move forward, because when you build a bridge, you want it to be there 50 to 100 years.
You can add something called fly ash to concrete to make it stronger and withstand all those EV trucks. The only problem? Fly ash is a byproduct of burning coal. Good times. In Sacramento, I'm Matt Levin for Marketplace.
Our executive producer is Nicole Childers. Our digital producer is Alex Schroeder. Engineers Brian Allison and Jay Siebold. It's the Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.